My name is Chris Mayo. I'm a UX developer and designer here at Microsoft, and I work primarily with developers like yourselves that are designing their applications to be moved to the Windows Store to create apps for Windows 8. And in this presentation, I'm going to take you through kind of some of the core tenets of designing Windows apps for the Windows Store, some of the things that we had in mind when we designed the Windows 8 touch mobile interface, that new start screen, the tiles, and so on. Understanding those principles will help you build apps that leverage those principles. I'll talk about why we feel that they're so important and the things that they provide to make your apps great. And then we'll talk about a little bit about app anatomy. So what are the different things that you can do when designing your app to make it feel like a great application that's just an extension of or integrated with the rest of the Windows 8 experience. So your users of your apps not only love what it does, but they love the way that it just feels like, hey, they're doing great things in Windows, and your app is just a great way that they get that particular task done, whether it's, you know, listening to music or photos or communicating with their friends or whatever. So this talk is actually an embodiment or some key learnings that I've had over the past, well, I guess it's almost been 12 months since I started first working with customers around building these apps for Windows 8 back in the early alphas. And when I first saw the new start screen and the tiles and started using the touch interface and started designing apps, it was kind of funny because I came from, you know, a desktop and a web background and knew both of those very well. And when I first saw the new start screen, I was incredibly excited about it, and I was incredibly jazzed about designing my first application. And then I sat down, you know, to design that first app. And it was funny, I took, you know, the normal tools that I use to start designing applications, which for me are just, you know, graph paper and a pencil to start kind of paper prototyping or sketching out my design and the things that I want to do and annotating those sketches to the point where it's like, yeah, that's something I can start, you know, storyboarding and so on. And it was funny because that first time I kind of sat there and scratched my head quite a bit thinking, wow, this is really different from the two different worlds that I've been living in the past, you know, designing, you know, either desktop applications or phone apps or even apps for the web. So what I'm going to walk through is, again, some of these core tenets and then some of the actual concepts that back up those core tenets. So when you guys go to work on designing your first Windows 8 app, you know, for the Windows Store, or if you start working with a design team, you'll understand a lot of these core concepts and why we did them and why we bake them into our design guidelines and why we bake them into the platform to make it really easy for you to design your first app. And then at the end, I'll provide plenty of resources, so if you want to dive in deep into any individual topic that I cover today, you'll have all the resources you need. Okay? So when we were designing the new start screen and these mobile apps that would live in the Windows Store, designing the platform and the app infrastructure for them, we had a couple of core principles that we felt really defined what a great Windows app was going to be. And again, I'm talking about Windows apps that you'll purchase or that you'll sell and people will purchase through the Windows Store. I'm not talking about desktop apps. We're all comfortable with that just from the work that we're doing today. So these Windows principles really guided us on what we were going to do as far as providing design guidance and what we baked into the platform and baked into the tools for what is a great Windows app, what is a great Windows app experience. So the first was do more with less, really focusing on creating an app that does something very, very well, that's just great at that particular experience, and removing any kind of distractions away from that experience and from the content that makes that experience great. The second thing we thought about was making it possible to really get this pride in software craftsmanship from the get-go. So build it into the platform so it was really, really easy to create pixel-level perfection within your app, the way that it's structured, the way that it presents its content, the way that people navigate through that content. Second, we thought about fluidity, and we thought about creating an app experience that felt very seamless and very lightweight. And you've probably heard people from Microsoft talk about apps that are fast and fluid. When you're talking about a mobile application that's touch-enabled, and people might be walking around using that application. They might be relaxing using that application. It needs to be very fast and fluid and very seamless in the way that it operates, because that's really the expectation of those users. They're not at a keyboard, they're not at a mouse, they've got their hand, they're relaxing, making an app experience that just flows very, very well. And we'll talk about how you can do that with the way that you arrange your UI, the way you navigate your UI, and the way that you present information through key animations. Next, we thought about being authentically digital. You know, what we have available to us is pixels, right? What can we do to make those pixels as clean and crisp and easy to consume as humanly possible? And then, how can we use the fact that we are a digital medium to kind of break away from physical paradigms to kind of maybe redefine the way people think about the content that they're consuming or the content that they're creating? And finally, we thought about creating an ecosystem of features where your application is unique and it's awesome and it does something very, very cool and does it very, very well, but also integrates with the rest of the Windows experiences that you might see on the start screen or in the charms bar. So it feels like it's not only unique, but it's also integrated with the Windows 8 experience. So people feel like they know Windows 8, they know how to use your app, and your app does something great within that particular Windows 8 experience. So first, let's talk about doing more with less. And this is really about focusing your app on what it's great at. And when I go and design into design workshops with dev teams or design teams, a common theme comes up that they'll talk about solving for discoverability. And really what we end up talking about is distractions and what distractions take away from what your app does so well or the goal of your application when you're designing it. And here's a great example. So we all know what an RSS reader is, right? And this is a desktop reader, and it could have been created, you know, with WinForms technology or WPF or whatever. It doesn't really matter. It's a desktop app. And if you look at the UI of this app, look at it across the top. It's got, you know, the web address to enter, and then a search bar, and then a settings button, and a refresh button. It's got a couple tabs for going between a details view and list view. It's got this tree control over here so you can navigate amongst all the different feed groups that you've created. It's got that list box over on the side so you can see all of the different items, all the different stories that are in the selected news group that you've got over there. Let's say it's the food group. And then if you look at this bottom right-hand corner, when we went to go and create this news app, if we were the dev team or the design team, you know, our goal was to create the best experience around, you know, consuming news stories or organizing and consuming news stories. Look at this screen. The bottom third of this screen is the news story that you're reading, right? Everything else around here is about, you know, settings and navigation and layout and so on. But it's only these pixels down here that are really dedicated to what your app is good at, what your app is supposed to be about. And what we wanted to do when we were thinking about Windows 8 and apps in the Windows Store was to think about what could we do to change this where every pixel on the screen is really dedicated to the content and to that scenario that your application is great at. And we came up with this principle of do more with less is really, for us, kind of a rallying cry around that concept. And we wanted to build that not only into the design guidance, but also into the platform to make that as easy as possible. Now, we came up with this concept fairly earlier, this term, Chrome, to describe all of those distractions on the screen that we saw on the previous screen, like the tabs for navigation and the group boxes for layout and the tree control for selecting items and so on. And we found that Chrome was really anything that distracts users from what your app is best at. And again, we wanted to, from a design perspective and from a platform perspective, make it as easy as possible to remove that Chrome from the screen and dedicate those pixels to the content and to the purpose or the goal of your application. So here's a great example of that. We did early workshops with Windows users to show them Windows 8 and to get feedback on the new start screen and these new app models. And when we started those workshops, one of the first things that we did is we asked users to draw windows for us. And here's an example of one of the drawings that a participant in that study did. And look at what they drew. They drew, you know, windows, the box. They drew, you know, the menu up at the top for an app. They drew the minimize button, the maximize button, the close button, a scroll bar down on the side, and then, you know, the start button and some icons down here, right? They drew everything about the app but the app, right? They drew the Chrome, the things that go around what the app does. So we started showing them Windows 8. We started showing them the new Windows Start screen. We started showing them some early samples of these apps that literally dedicate every pixel to, you know, the content of the app itself. And then we asked them to draw Windows again. And this is what they drew. They obviously received the message that Windows 8 apps are all about the content. They drew the title of the app up there. That was something that really sunk in for them. They drew the different boxes or the different content areas that they were using within each of the different applications or the different groups of data or content. This is a pretty important shift. They went from what they thought Windows was or what they think of Windows was as being just, you know, menu bars and scroll bars and stuff like that, to thinking about the app and its content and what it's great at. And this is the kind of the shift that kind of happened in my mind as I started first designing my first Windows 8 apps or my first apps for the store. And if you look at our design guidelines and some of the slides we're going to talk about here in a second, we talk about how it's easy to make this happen and how it creates a beautiful application, a content-rich application, that's not burdened by all this Chrome, all these distractions from what your app is great at. So again, we did this. This was a guiding principle for us. So we wanted to build it into the tools that you use to build apps. So Visual Studio, all of the app templates or the project templates, build it into the platform to make it as easy as possible for you to not only design an app that looks like this and works like this, but also to build it. So the first step when I do design workshops is we'll actually go through and create a best at statement. We'll create a statement about what is this app going to be the best app in the world at? What does it do? Is it about, you know, looking and organizing pictures? Is it about sharing, you know, family history? Is it about organizing and using news stories or consuming news stories and so on? And then we'll build a list to reinforce this. And again, when you think about that solving for discoverability, actually the problem is you have too many distractions, too many things that you added that took away from that thing that your app is going to be great at. And we'll actually go through and take out all the features that distract from that thing that our app is going to do. And then from there, we'll develop an information architecture, and we'll start developing what the content for the app is going to be. And then we'll start using that content before Chrome and do more with less principle to start designing the layout of the screen or layout of the pages. Now, these best at statements are best if they're one sentence. They're very clear and straightforward. They're very specific. And if you're going to be selling an app in the store, you need to think about differentiation. Your app's going to be great. How is it going to be great in a way that makes it unique and different from the other applications in that category within the store? So, for example, for that newsreader app, you know, rather than just saying we're going to create a newsreader app and try and figure out all the different scenarios and all the different features that would reinforce that, we'll go through and create a sentence like, newsreader is the best app in its category at helping users view the latest headlines and personalize their news sources. And the things that we think are really unique in this sample scenario are the fact that we're going to focus on headlines and letting them organize and manage the headlines and the groups of headlines that are important to them, like technology stories or the sport that they're into or the fact that they like this car, right? And personalize that in such a way that it's really going to be unique and configured just for them. So it's going to be my news, right? And that's what we think we're going to be the best at. And then we'll start thinking about the content that makes that happen. You've heard the phrase content is king probably more than a few times. And in Windows 8 apps and in the Windows Store, really that couldn't be more true. We feel like beautiful content and immersing users in that content is really the recipe for success. So when I say content before Chrome, what we're talking about is removing every visual element off the screen as much as possible to leave as many pixels as possible for that content. right? If your app is great at something and the content reinforces and makes that happen, get rid of all of the tabs, get rid of the tree control and so on. Move the settings button someplace else and get rid of all of that so you can have that content be first and foremost in your app, right? And at that point, you don't need to solve for discoverability because you've removed all the distractions that that created the discoverability issue in the first place. But that Chrome and that newsreader app, like those, that tree control and those tabs, the setting button and the search bar and the search button up at the top, you know, they did do something. So where does that functionality go? Where do I put that within my UI? Well, traditionally, that Chrome, like those search buttons, the interaction of that, the layout of the tree control and then the group boxes, the ability to navigate among stories and stuff like that, those are all important features. So we still need to supply them, but we need to do it in such a way that is content first, right? Where it's about the content and not about the doodads that let you get to the content. So traditionally, Chrome comes from layout, interaction, and navigation. How do we solve for that in our design when we're creating a Windows 8 app? Well, the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to lay out the content in such a way that the content is structured just by the way that it's not only laid out, but the way that it's presented. It's very crisp lines between the content and the background. We remove all the lines and boxes that we use to organize the content and use space, positive, negative space, and the distribution of that content and how it's grouped together to show groups, to show how stories are related to each other and so on. And then really take away all of those distractions so you just see the content. So an example of that, if you look at this news reader, this RSS reader, what if we just took out some of these group boxes and some of these lines? Well, already the app opens up a little bit, and it feels a little less restricted. We still have a lot of Chrome on the screen here, and we still have an issue as far as how the pixels on the screen are reserved for the thing our app is great at, because it's still that bottom third. If you compare that to some different applications that we have in the Windows Store, apps that are shipping as, you know, built-in applications like the weather app, every single pixel on this app is about the weather of Redmond, right? And the way that these different tiles of information for the different days, you know, days of the week and the weather forecast, the way that the font or the typography is laid out, you can definitely see the difference between, you know, this is Redmond and over there is Houston and so on. It's really easy to see how this data is structured and laid out, and how this city is different from that city, the 30 degrees from the 68 degrees. But you'll notice that everything on the screen, every single pixel is dedicated to the content about the weather. We want to be an app that's great at showing the weather. Every pixel is dedicated. Yet it's still easy, it's still well organized, and it's easy to consume. And it doesn't have to be stark. It can be emotional as well. If you look at this example of a music application, you know, I'm listening to the Gorillaz, Green World, and I've got, you know, what I would expect, like some album art and then a ticker to show me where I am with the song. And for the background, I've used this picture of a crowd listening to a concert, right? And we've all been to concerts before and had a great time. Probably evokes an emotion in you just like it does in me. And I'm still laying out the content. I'm dedicating every pixel to the content that my app is providing to the user, the user's consuming, but I can arrange it and structure it in a way that's not only well laid out, but also communicates some emotion to the user. So a great example of that. So the next thing that we think about once we've laid out the screen and prioritized the content and prioritized those pixels time around the content is around interactions. So where do I put all of those different buttons and the way to, you know, select different news stories and mark them as read and stuff like that? Well, I can integrate commands into the content itself. So, you know, here's a great example. If I wanted to be able to navigate any of these groups of, let's say this is a shopping application and different groups of items that people can buy, rather than putting a button on each individual group to navigate that, we're in a touch-based world. They can just touch the touch the content and use that to navigate directly to it, right? So I can remove those elements. Right, they're redundant, and that just gives me, again, more pixels to show, you know, the title, of that particular group of items and then maybe dedicate this gray box to pictures of common items or the things that are hot and new, right? I can also use the edge of the screen. So if you think about this newsreader application, the search bar across the top, the ability to do refresh and so on, if I remove those from the UI, again, more of the pixels on the screen are dedicated to the content within my application. If I lay that out and make it navigable, so you know the peak of the story is now behind the story itself. If I want to see, if I look at this picture of this beer and want to learn a little bit about something at Oktoberfest, I can just touch it and navigate it. So the content, I show a great picture and then a title to entice people to look at the content, but the content is in a next navigable page. You can see that this is really well structured and well laid out. I can see the difference between Pioneer Woman and Closet Cooking just from the fact that there's some positive, or I'm sorry, some negative space between them that's different between the different stories that are within that group. But where does that search feature go? Where does that refresh button go? Well, I can leverage the edge by using what's called an app bar. And that app bar is accessible just by swiping up from the bottom or doing a Windows button Z. And I can put all the commands that I might have normally littered the screen with and put them on the app bar. So they're always accessible, right? Just one swipe away, right? And I've got the refresh button there, and I can add feeds through the add button. And I can even make this contextual. So if you're selecting items, you can change the buttons that are on the screen. I can move that search feature over to the charms bar and get that off the screen so it's accessible not only just one swipe away anywhere in my application, again, freeing up pixels for my app, but it's also done in a consistent way within Windows. So any Windows 8 user is going to know that when they want to search for something, they can just grab the charms bar and search for it there. We're actually going to talk about that as a feature here in a few more slides. Let's just look at a couple more examples. This is a photo viewing application or photo organizing application. And look at this particular screen or this particular page. Every single pixel is dedicated to the photo. When I want to grab and maybe set the title or you know, put an annotation or some notes on this photo, I just swipe up from the side and I get that app bar. All right, same thing for IE10. Right? IE10, the address bar, the refresh button, the ability to pin a page, and different tabs, they're all providing this app bar. So when I'm browsing a web page, every pixel is dedicated to that web page. So this is something you definitely want to use in your design to make that content really shine, make that content that backs up your best at statement available. Use every single pixel. And then again, with these app bars, I can provide commands contextually. So rather than having a bunch of checkboxes and then a delete button that's on the screen all the time, if I wanted to select a story, right, just by cross-swiping it and then mark it as read or add it to favorites or so on, I can do that just by cross-swiping. And it works for multiple items as well. In fact, let's just go to the start screen and look at some examples of this. So if I'm in Windows right now, you can see that this is the start screen that's built into Windows 8. And every single, and we, you know, use these principles as well. Every single pixel of the start screen is dedicated to the content. In this case, in Windows 8, it's apps. And if I wanted to do commands like wanted to see all the apps, I just go ahead and swipe from the bottom, right? Or do a Windows Z, right? And the app bar comes up. Right, and if I select this, it takes me to all the apps. If I start selecting items just by cross-swiping them, so the app pans, the start screen pans this way, if I just cross-swipe and select these guys, you can see that the app bar down here changes. Right? It's contextual. So I can make this particular tile smaller, I can make it larger, I can turn off the live tile, and so on. And that's all built into the platform, built into the design guidance, so you can use this as well, again, to dedicate more pixels to what your app is great at. If I go over here and grab the charms bar, I can hit search, and I can look for the music app. I can just start typing and go to the music app. That search term, let's say that I wanted to find something about the Beastie Boys. Looks like I've got some files for the Beastie Boys. Oh, it looks like I don't have any music for them. Oh, did I spell it wrong? There we go. Let's try that. I should have some Beastie Boys on this machine. It looks like I don't, maybe just some playlists and stuff like that. But if I wanted to switch to a different application, I could do that as well. And that's a common, that's gonna be a common experience for Windows users to be able to search. And again, the great thing that's about that particular feature is that it's built into the platform, so you can use it from wherever you're in your application to provide application-specific search, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. But again, if you look at this example, on every single content item, I've added a favorites button, a share button, and then a download button. Rather than doing that, I can remove those elements from the screen and just make it so if you cross-swipe and select an item, it'll bring up the app bar, and then you can, you know, mark something as favorite or email it to a friend or download it. It's cool in the fact that it works for multiple selections as well. So if I select multiple items, I can not only make this app bar contextual, but I can apply it to all of the items together. And then finally, navigation is another element that we see on screens quite a bit, like tabs and the list view control in that prior example. What we want to do within our Windows 8 apps is we want to make the content navigable itself. So structure the application to match the information architecture of your app, whether that's, you know, hierarchical or flat, and make the content itself navigable. So if you're looking at a group of stories and want to look at just that group, click on the item header. If you want to look at a particular story, just click on it. So two patterns that we see very commonly in Windows 8 apps is one is the hierarchical pattern, where I have a home page that's really the hub of all the different content groups and content items within my app. And then when I want to navigate that, I can either navigate to the group or I can navigate to an individual item. So an example of that would be like the Bing app. If I go into the Bing News app, you can see here that on the Bing News app, I have, you know, the home page here, and it's got, you know, the leading story as the upper left-hand pixel here. And I've got different groups of news stories like politics and sports and entertainment. If I wanted to go into just the business stories, I just click on the header, and that takes me to all the business stories, right? And then if I wanted to go into this particular business story, I just touch it. I just select it, right? If I want to go back, this back button is always in the upper left-hand corner, make it easy for me to navigate in and out of stories, right? And it's really cool in the fact that not only have I dedicated every single pixel on the screen to news stories, right, and made them very easy to navigate just by panning back and forth or, you know, going into groups and then going back, but it's very, very easy for me to explore the application because I've got this hub and spoke model, so I can go into groups or go into stories and go back and forth. It's really, really easy for me to navigate and very seamless. So that's a great example of the navigation pattern, the hierarchical navigation pattern. Another pattern that we see quite often that you'll see in some of the apps that we ship with Windows 8, oh, here's actually a map. If you look at, this is a great map that we did for a sample application that we were working on, Contoso Travel. And you can kind of see this hub and spoke model, the relationship between the home page where we've laid out all of the different groups of stories and then the top stories in each individual group. And then you can see I can navigate from a particular group like featured destinations just by touching on the group header, going into the featured destination page, which lists out all of the different items, like a story on Barcelona, Spain. I can just touch that and go to Barcelona, Spain and read that travel story. And going back, just using the back button. All right, and I get this question a lot. Well, what do I do if I have lots and lots of content that won't fit on the screen? Normally, I would do like some tabs, or I'd have some filters and stuff like that. Well, tabs, again, end up being Chrome that take away from your content. So what we have is the ability to do panning. So you can see here, here's an example of all of these Contoso travel stories, and you can saw it just like I did in Bing News. To see more of the stories, I can see I've got a visual hint here that there's more stories, that there's this block that's half obscured by the edge of the screen. I can just pan over to the right. And if I have lots and lots of information that I'm worried that users of my app might want to, rather than panning five or six screens, might want to get to a particular group really easily or really quickly, what I can do is support this feature called Semantic Zoom, where they can just pinch and it'll take them to a condensed version of my content. So a great example of that is on the Windows start screen. You can see I have all these different groups for some of my desktop apps and news that I read and music I like and stuff like that, right? Not a lot of information, but if I wanted to look at that and navigate to a particular group really quickly, I can just pinch it to use Semantic Zoom. And then it takes me down to a different view of the data. Here it's just shrinking down the icons and showing me the groups a little easier. So it's easy to navigate back and forth. And again, when you're designing your app, you can think about, how do I want to present this data in Semantic Zoom? Do I want to show, you know, smaller icons? Do I want to group the data? Do I want to present it in a different way? And it just makes it easy for you to provide a large volume of data that's still very easy to navigate. And then the flat navigation pattern is another great example of how you can take data that's not related to each other, but just make it easy to switch between that data. And again, IE is a great example of that, where I'm in the touch version of IE10 here. I swipe to get the app bar. I've got these different pages, and switching between them is just a matter of clicking on them. And if I want to add a new one, I can just add a new one here. And then the address bar, just type MSN and go right to the page, right? Not related, but easy to switch amongst all of them. Okay? So next we want to talk about pixels and talk about getting a pixel-perfect design that's well-structured and easy for users to kind of see data and see relationships between data. And we do that in two different ways. One is through typography, and the other is using a grid to structure data. So typography is all about using beautiful, clear, and crisp fonts to represent information within the app. But going beyond that, using the size and the weight of fonts to communicate structure. And a great example of that is if you look at a type ramp for the built-in or the default font for Windows 8 apps, you can see that we use 42-point font in order to show a heading, a 20-point font, either semi-light or regular to show a subheading, 11-point font for regular text and a 9-point font for tertiary text. And this relationship between the different sizes and weights of the fonts makes it easy for you to communicate structure within your app. So you don't have to have all of those tree controls and so on. You can use the text itself to communicate something. And it works regardless of what kind of character set that you're working in. So if you look at this type ramp, it's really easy to see the difference between a header and a subheader, or a header and some body copy. And if you look at even the default templates that we're shipping with Visual Studio, you can see that we're reinforcing this in the templates and the default CSS that's built into the default project templates. So you can see that this is a header, this is a subheader, these are subtext, and then this is tertiary text. And you can see the structure of this page not only from the content, even though it's just gray boxes here, but the size of the fonts communicate something. I know that this header is what this page is all about. And then I have different items based just on the size and the weight and the color of the font. Likewise, we use a grid system to arrange content on the screen in order to provide structure for your app. You know, we don't have all of these group boxes and so on, so how do we show relationships between different content items or groups of content? Again, we use this grid and positive and negative space to communicate this to the user. So if you look at the units of the grid, these actually are defined as a subunit is 5 pixels by 5 pixels, and a unit is 20 pixels by 20 pixels. And a column to show the differences between not just content items in a group, but different groups, is 80 pixels. You might be wondering how we came up with these numbers. Well, In Windows 8, we support a lot of different form factors, everything from a 10-inch slate running 1024 by 768 all the way up to, you know, 30-inch monitors, HD monitors. And scaling is really, really important. And we use these particular pixel units to make it possible to scale amongst all those different screen sizes and all those different pixel densities to make it easy for your app to look awesome regardless of what form factor it's running on. Right? And if you look at the design guidelines, we provide some great examples of this. Even one of them is the font sizes that we selected. So we selected these font sizes so regardless of what DPI your app is running on, they're always going to be crisp and they're always going to line up well on the grid. Right? Because again, Windows 8 at a platform level takes care of DPI scaling and scaling your application. It's just a matter of designing for that from the onset. And again, these guidelines make that possible. So here's an example of using padding to communicate something about content. I'm using two units or 10 pixels to show that, you know, this story and this story are related somehow. You can see that this first block of stories, even though they're different sizes and they're laid out in a different structure other than just, you know, like a 3x2 grid, you can see that they're related to each other just from the space between them, which is very different from these two groups of content where I've used that column, that 80 pixels, to show that, hey, these are two different groups. And you saw that in the Bing News app. It was easy to see the different news stories in sports versus the different groups of politics versus sports. All right. We also use these units to define a baseline. So where the particular font for the header of a particular page is. So people, whenever they look at a particular page, their eye always lands on the same pixel. That muscle memory gives them a sense of confidence in Windows and in your apps, just like we have a margin on the side. And the content region where that's laid out is 7 units from the top. And again, that's where people, when they start your app, their eye's going to automatically go there from using Windows 8 apps, you know, whether they're built in or from other developers. And if you look at this within the app, like the Headlines app, that silhouette, where the headline goes and where the content starts and where the subtopic headers goes, it's pretty consistent across different applications. And that consistency gives users, again, a feeling of quality and consistency that we felt was so important that we actually built it into all of the templates. So it's very easy for your app to be laid out in such a way that, you know, regardless of what your app does and the beautiful content and the brand that it reflects, that it has that structure that feels like a Windows 8 app. But you have some freedom to structure the content within that content area to communicate something. You can use size and proportion to say, hey, this first news story, just like we saw in the Bing app, is the most important one. That's the leading story of the day versus story 2 and 3, which are still important, but maybe I want to grab your eye with this upper left-hand pixel, that great real estate that people see first. And I can also use position. That upper left-hand corner is the first thing that people see. That's the first thing their eye is going to see when they start the application. I'll put my first most important content there and then maybe put some other lesser important or other stories off to the side. And here's an example of that. I know that this is sample text, so it doesn't really say anything. But you can see that the most important thing, or the thing that I really want to grab people's attention with, is this big, beautiful picture of that mojito there, right? And I use a big, bold font to communicate that this is what this particular story is about. And you can start to see how you can structure your content in such a way to present, you know, importance and to present emphasis. So next we talk about being fast and fluid, and we talk about animation. And there's a couple of great examples of this to communicate emotion almost to a cinematic level within your application. Here's an example. So what I'm going to do here is I've got in the slide just an animation that shows the charms bar and shows the keyboard. Right? Notice how they just appear. And this is really different from how Windows presents this information. If I go over to the start bar and just grab the charms bar, notice that it animates in from the side. And what does that do? Well, it communicates something to the user that, by the way, the charms bar is always there just off to the side of the screen for you. And whenever you need it, just drag your thumb across from the side. And you notice how all the items within the charms bar, like search and share and so on, animate in from the side as well to communicate that by the way, that feature is always there for you, just like the app bar. All right, and rather than just making it appear, which says nothing, we animate it up from the bottom to show where it lives. Right? Just like in IE, if I'm using the touch keyboard and I type in this text box, you can see that the keyboard comes up from the bottom to say, hey, the keyboard's always there and it's available to you. Whenever you click in something that you're going to start typing in, we're going to animate that up from the side to show you that it's always there and available. So have confidence that whenever you want to touch something or you're on a touch device and you want to type something in, just touch where you want to type and we're going to bring the keyboard up for you. We even animate the screen up there as well. So we thought that this was so important. Not only did we build it into everything within Windows, like here's an example of the start screen. Watch how the tiles animate in from the left to the right to communicate that there's more stuff over here, right? But we thought that this was so important that we built it into not only all the Windows 8 apps experiences that we're shipping, but we also built it into an animation library. So all the built-in controls that you're going to build your Windows 8 app with, they all have these animations built in. If you're building a custom control or building a custom page, you can use the animation library to animate your UI, again, to communicate something to your users, like where the content lives, or entrances and exits, fades, and so on. We also did a lot of work around ergonomics and touch, building touch into the platform, all of the built-in controls and so on, to make it great, to make it possible to build a great touch experience. And we have lots of guidance around up on the design.windows.com page to talk to you about, you know, what is a touch system versus a keyboard and mouse system? What are the considerations you need to make when you're building these UIs? And one of them is ergonomics. You need to think about designing for windows and hands, designing for people holding the device with two hands. What does that mean? How are they going to hold the device? Are they going to be doing a lot of data entry? Is it going to be simple things with their thumbs, or are they going to lay it on their lap, and are they going to type on it on the soft keyboard? How's the app going to be used? And you need to think about that when you're building your application. A lot of this has been built into the controls, so all the controls are touch first. You get the mouse and the keyboard essentially for free. And things like touch targets and being able to provide visual interactions, like on the start screen, if I touch something, I can see that it goes down, so I know that it's clickable, right? If I select something, it kind of drops down a little bit. I'm providing that automatic feedback to give touch users confidence within my app. And a lot of these same features are built into the controls. You just need to design for them and then leverage them within the built-in controls themselves. And then next, when we think about being fast and fluid, you know, creating a great touch UI is something, but we need to also back that up with a simplified UI that's easy to navigate. When you looked at that Bing News app, it was very easy for me to navigate about groups and navigate amongst news stories. And how we developed that app was to make it as simple as possible to navigate through the flow of the application. Part of that was navigation. Part of that was eliminating distractions. Another thing that we can do within our applications to make them very fast and fluid is do some really simple things to make users, to simplify the flow of applications. And one of the things that you're going to see quite often, for example, is roaming settings and preferences. So when I log into Windows 8 as my Windows ID or my Windows account, you can have your application roam settings. So if I, you know, made a selection that I think this news story, this group of news stories is the most important one and I want that to be the first thing that I see, you can roam that setting. So when I go from my laptop over to my slate, I open up the application and that setting's been roamed to the cloud. So that preference that I made is automatically in all the versions of the app that I use across all the devices. And it's a great way to take a UI or to take the flow of a UI and make it not only flow well within the app, but flow across all the instances of the app. So you can take things like settings and preferences and roam them, or take context. If I was, you know, typing in an email and set down one machine and went to another machine, have that email be available and all that in-process email available so I can just finish it and click send. I don't have to restart or go grab it from drafts and so on. The next principle that we use to guide us in creating Windows 8, but also to provide you guidance towards creating your apps, It's this concept of being authentically digital. And what we wanted to do is to take the experience of Windows 8 and move it beyond physical metaphors. And probably the best example of this is some of the things that we do around semantic zoom. Right, so here's an example. I'm looking at the file picker dialog within Windows 8, and I'm looking at all the pictures on my system. And maybe I want to zoom down and see those sorted by date, right? Which would be if you took all the pictures, the physical pictures in your library or in your photo books, it'd be fairly hard to do. Arranging them by alphabetical, again, another view on the data to find the particular picture that I want. And you can even extend that to present the data in different ways, actually change the semantics of the data. So if I was looking at a page with all the sci-fi books on it, there were different groups like adventure and anthologies and so on. If I were to pinch this down, maybe I want to show the data in a completely different way, like show popularity just by changing the size of the block for the different adventure, anthologies, high-tech books, and so on. So I can take semantics and change them around to present different views of the data as well. Again, it would be hard to do in the physical world. Since we're pixels and we're digital, it's easy for us to do in Windows 8. And again, these are things that are built into the platform, like semantic zoom or built into the list view control. And next, we wanted to think about making the pixels on the screen as crisp and clear as possible. And not only from a typographic standpoint, as we saw, thinking about type ramp, thinking about the grid and how we structure content, but actually in the way that we present everything on the screen. So here are some examples of some icons that you're probably familiar with from the Vista or the Windows 7 days. And they're really glitzy, and they're 3D, and they have shadows and so on. But rather than focusing on trying to take a pixel and make it look as realistic as possible, we know that these aren't real things. We know that they're just pixels on the screen. Let's make them as clear as possible. And here's some example of some app bar buttons that are built into the Sago UI font that you can use for doing things like going back or adding a news story or marking something as read or refresh. They're super, super crisp. They're super, super clean. They look great regardless of the DPI or the size of the screen that you're on. Let's use these. They're very, very clear and they're very honest. Right? And again, we bake them into the design guidance and bake them into the platform. And then finally, I want to talk about a concept that we came up with very early on in Windows, where we wanted to take some core experiences of using Windows apps and up-level them to the point where they were baked into the OS and they were easy for you to leverage within your applications. And that's the concept of contracts. And these contracts, like search and share and file picking, things that you see throughout Windows 8, what we wanted to do is take these particular concepts and make them core to the Windows 8 experience and make it easy for you to build them into your app. So anytime anyone wants to do search within an app, they just know that they're going to grab that charm bar off to the side and they're going to hit search. So examples that we had seen earlier today, if I go into, you know, the music application, you know, rather than me providing a search feature and using up the UI like we had talked about when we were talking about content before Chrome, mute that, I can just go ahead and hit the search terms bar, right? And I can go and find, you know, the Beastie Boys. And if I wanted to select a different application, like, you know, someone was in Internet Explorer and wanted to switch to your app, I just select that app and it applies the search term to it. These contracts are available to all applications, so you can leverage them within your app. And users, when they start using Windows 8, are going to get used to using the charms bar. They're going to get used to the search feature. They're going to get used to, you know, the share feature. And they're going to be able to do things like pick an application and hand data off to that other app to consume it in such a way to share between applications. Users are going to expect this within your app, just like if I were to go into this application, the Mail app, and say I want to add an attachment. I can not only pick things like documents on my file system, but I can also pick amongst apps themselves. Like here's some pictures of some recipes that I've made. I'm an awesome cook, right? And I can include them in the Mail. That was kind of seamless and kind of deceptively easy, and that's the way it'll feel to users. But think about what I just did there. I was in the Mail application consuming a new email. I picked content from another application, the Contoso Cookbook app, and back and forth and vice versa. It's a really, really powerful thing to leverage these contracts in your apps. Look at the design guidance for these experiences and think about how you can leverage them to reinforce the best at statement of your app. Because again, users will expect them. When you build them into your app, it can result in higher satisfaction in the app, a better rating, more usage, more launches, and so on. Okay? So let's look at this newsreader app that we had started with and think about removing some of that Chrome, right? Just the boxes that we used for layout, taking some of those doodads off the screen, like the search bar and moving it to the charms bar, taking the settings button and moving it to the settings charm, taking some of those commands and moving them to the edge in the app bar, and rearranging the content in such a way that really the content is providing the structure of the app and providing the layout of the app. All the navigation, rather than being on tabs and on list view control and so on, is just built into the content itself. I see that story of Oktoberfest, I want to look at it, I just touch it. If I want to see all the stories from the Pioneer Woman, I just touch the heading. And you can see the app has transformed over just making those steps and making those considerations in the design from this application where I had all this stuff all over the screen and just that little bit of the bottom of the screen was dedicated to the app, to every single pixel is dedicated to the app. And it's beautiful, it's well-structured, it's easy to navigate. Semantic Zoom providing me different views of the app. And it's all just by following some of these design principles. And I know that we talked about a lot of concepts in a very short time, just an hour. But hopefully some of these things had the opportunity to sink in. So when you go to some of the resources I provide in the slide deck, you can dig into them a little bit more deeply and work with your design team to design your first Windows 8 application. And that includes being really, really focused on the scenario and the content of your app, so doing more with less. So take that focus of your app and what it's great at, think about the content and the information that you're providing, and remove everything that distracts from that. Moving different elements to the charms bar and the apps bar and so on. Think about the layout of those pixels now that they're dedicated to all the content in your app, and think about typography and think about the grid on how you're going to structure and communicate how data is related or grouped together. Be fast and fluid, so use animations to communicate something to your app or to your users. Use ergonomics and touch, so it's very easy for that touch user to navigate around and to feel connected to the data through instant feedback, like touching a tile and having it depressed so they know that it's touchable, or selecting something, having that drop-down animation. Being authentically digital to take those elements on the screen and make them as crisp and clear as possible, so it's really easy to see exactly what that button does. You're not distracted by the shininess of the button. It's an add button. It's a favorites button. And then finally, taking the different contracts or different concepts like search and share and app-to-app file picking and building those experiences into your app so users will expect them and they'll be satisfied with the great feature that you have for sharing and for search that backs up that best at statement and makes your app unique and beautiful and a great addition to the Windows 8 experience. So those are the Windows app design principles. I've provided a few links here. The first is the WindowsUserExperienceTraining.com. This is a group of 9 different videos that take each one of these individual sessions or individual topics that we've talked about and drills down into them and provides guidance at a very fine-grained detail. The next is design.windows.com. This is the design center, if you're used to dev centers, the design-centric center for Windows 8. So all the design guidance, all of the different aspects of navigation and app bars and where do you put the buttons and how do you do context and stuff like that can all be found as design.windows.com. And of course, as a developer, I'm used to going dev.windows.com in order to learn how to take that design and turn it into an application that's not only well-designed but does that thing incredibly well, right? So we as developers are going to take those designs and create awesome apps and put them up to the store with our design team. Okay? Well, thanks very much for your time today. I appreciate you guys coming to learn about Windows 8 and learn about Windows 8 design. I hope you have a great day. And I think we've got a 15-minute break, so any questions, more than happy to take questions while we switch presenters. So thanks very much. Thank you. Thanks for coming.